Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Everyone, welcome to Culture Vulture, and we're gonna hit you like instantly with the saga that's just unfolded to get us here. Because Laura, I was gonna get on the mic and say I have an update to Alarmgate for you. Like everything was fine. I've had word that it's fixed and it's gonna be all good. So I was feeling really confident.
Fake news, everyone.
Fake news. If I can get here and. My goddamn key card thing, electronic key card on my phone, won't let me in because it's disabled all my Bluetooth permissions. I turn them all back on, still doesn't work. I'm just sitting outside messaging Laura like, we're going to have to call it. We're going to have to call it a day.
This podcast was almost over to be before it even began.
And Laura has all this research, and I was about to say, I think you're going to have to do a monopod, like, on your own.
That I cannot tell you how much that is my worst nightmare. Like, this is borderline for me. Like, this is cusp. So me getting on the pod, but it's talking to myself, is too carry energy, and I'm not into it. Honestly, that was also. I just want to tell everyone that normally we've got 20 minutes of chat prior before jumping on the mic. Today we're coming in hot and fresh, and
we already know we are on a time limit. And then I've fucked around wasting 10 minutes of it not being able to get in. I honestly, I'm like at my wit's end with this studio. It's not the studio's fault, but every day, like I even had to enter the alarm twice. Uh-huh. It came out with trouble again. I was like, I'm actually going to be sick. Like, I'm going to be sick.
You need to move, Liz, to the UK studio. The UK studio is amazing.
You know what? This is just pushing me to move over to your side of the world, I think.
Well, there's room for you at my dining table. So we've only got one other chair. So.
Well, there's not at the moment because Stanley Tucci's lights. Grandma's there or auntie's there?
Stanley Tucci's lights auntie is staying with us, and my flat in London, no one's seen it, so they wouldn't know, but it is very small and you can hear just about everything. So when I'm recording these, Stanley Tucci light is lying on the bed in the room next door under strict instructions to not breathe. So
not like heavy breath like I was into the mic.
So we're on a tight schedule today because they're at a dinner giving me the peace and quiet that I need to record this, and it's going to be 10 p.m. by the time they come home on a Tuesday.
I know. Okay, very quickly, everyone, we teased it last week, but we're going to be talking about therapy speak this week, which I'm very excited to talk about because feels something that's very up our alley.
It definitely does. I said for people who love to talk about how they're an Enneagram 3 that's anxiously attached and has unbearable feelings, this is the perfect pod for us.
This is the perfect pod. No, truly, it is perfect. We were going to do it last week. We already had a great ep for you, so we didn't do it last week. But first, Laura, what the hell describes your week?
My week this week, Luz, is summed up in one word, my favourite word, you might have guessed it, community. Not Stanley Tucci.
Oh, my God, it's going to be food.
Oh, food.
I was about to
food.
Food. What sums up my week? Food. My favourite word is my beautiful word in the world.
Sorry, everyone, that we normally get through this before we come on the pod.
Yes, you're getting our live.
You are getting our live thoughts. So my word this week is food. No, it's not. It's community. Luz.
Sorry, I am so weak. Oh, Ruby, cut that out of me.
Sorry.
No, yuck. Yeah, we usually do get this out before the pod. So your word this week.
My word this week is community. And for those of you who read the newsletter, which hopefully is everyone here, I struggled to find community when I first got here. Although in hindsight, I struggled for like 6 weeks and I saw that as a big struggle. But in reality, we got there. Still getting there, very big city. But this week was just one of those weeks where I feel like, again, chief of romanticizing everything, but we have become friends with the fishmonger down the road. And they have a dog. Have I talked about this before? Have I told you?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
So they have a little dog and we went to the fishmongers and they've just opened in the neighborhood. So we kind of went down to say welcome to the neighborhood because we're obviously the, you know, very important people in the neighborhood having been here for 2 minutes. But we went to say welcome. I love food. So I was like, love food, would love some fish. And they had this little dog. And I was like, your dog's so cute. Does he get lonely here? And they were like, oh, well, you know what? Actually, he kind of does, which is not what I was expecting. Anyway, we've now ended up in an arrangement where I look after their dog every Friday.
Wait, do you work from home on Fridays?
Yeah, Fridays I work from home. And so I get to take Frank, my little Frank. And I go and pick him up and he comes with me home and works from home, comes for coffee with me and Artis sometimes. Oh. And it's just the cutest thing in the world. And I thought if I could tell little Laura that from August that she's going to find a friend and they're going to, you know, not think I'm a sociopath and give me their dog, which maybe they should have thought about a little bit more. But no, like,
honestly, I'm basically a dog and I trust you with my life. So
she's a dog with a blog, everyone.
I have a dog with a blog and you look after me every, what is it for you? Tuesday evening and Wednesday morning.
Every Tuesday.
Shipped off from Ruby to you for a little bit of therapy to make me be able to do my job.
She's a dog with a blog. Luz, what describes your week? Please don't tell me it's food.
Full disclosure, was planning on getting into the studio and having like a nice little time to tinker with my script. So I really don't have anything except for some thoughts on therapy speak that I wrote last week for you. But it has to be like a bit of a come down because I saw the 1975 twice last week and I'm feeling like I haven't had like, you know, post-concert depression since One Direction when I was like 15. And this, it was just that good that, like, you can read all about it. I wrote, like, in a lot of detail, I wrote about it and I put it all over TikTok and fucking hundreds of thousands of you have seen it by now. But it was just like the Wellington show. Maddie Healy just did the most. I don't know. It was a very, like, rare. They played songs I don't usually play. Yeah. They, like, came into the fucking crowd. I don't know. It was just amazing and it really made me like love because I'd been to so many concerts lately. I think that I was just like a bit concerted out. Fucking look at my privilege. But then I like just loved it all over again and I loved being in the crowd. I loved being in the mosh for like the first time in ages and it was just the bomb. So coming down off that a little bit, but feeling hashtag blessed.
I can't believe he came into the crowd. I was talking to a girl at work about it and she was like, how did she get so close to him? Like,
well, okay, full disclosure again, that was a Siska bestie that I was sort of messaging while I was there. She was the one that got so close. I was like halfway out the door because I was like, they never do encores, like blah, blah, blah. And then Maddie's like, I'm making a film. If you got, this is what you get for being like a really peaceful and nice crowd. Like, I'm going to come in and you're just going to give me some room. And then so we stayed, obviously, and he just stood in the middle. And then the crowd actually interrupted him and sung Tutu Mai Ngā Iwi. And at the start, he was like, what the fuck? But then he was like, I think he realized that it was actually cute. But yeah, the crowd was just real nice and like not aggressive. And I think he was like, this is the place for me to just part you and come into the crowd. But insane.
But we've talked about this before and I've said this before, definitely. New Zealand crowds are like that. Like we're a great place for celebs, yeah. I tell you. Like I think because it's so, A, we don't have like any paparazzi really to speak of.
Yeah.
Like, and B, I think people are so like grateful that people come to the other side of the world to visit us that when like if you want to walk around, I mean the number of times I've seen like every single traveling musician or actor in Ponsonby Central.
Yeah.
Like, and everyone's just kind of, you know, very quietly looking at them, but no one, rarely would you get harassed, right?
Yes. And it's rarely. That's what is really interesting as well is because I was in Wellington like for the concert and also I was just working. So I was on the main street of Wellington, right? And the whole day I was walking up and down the main street, like going to my hotel or whatever. And I was thinking like, I could very honestly bump into them at any point today. And
100%.
Because it's so small. But then I got to the airport and the security guy saw me in my merch and was like, did you go to the concert? I was like, yeah, it was fucking great. And he was like, Maddie Healy was here 1 hour ago, like going through. And I was like,
are you fucking
kidding me? Like, that would have been not only the best thing ever for me, it would have been great for like everyone in the community that loves the 1975. Like the fact that I, of all people, happened to bump into him, but I didn't. And then I thought I saw him and I got too scared anyway when I just thought I saw him. I was like, okay, I'd never go up to you ever. So probably lucky that I did.
But it is the kind of place where literally you can most likely bump in. Like, it's, you've probably got your best chance, I would say, in Auckland or Wellington of bumping into a musician. I mean, literally having been the person walking around with them, I mean, everyone is just normally so relaxed when they come to New Zealand anyway. So fans out there, you're lucky.
Yeah.
New Zealand fans.
They also just weren't spotted. I think they must have stayed in their hotel rooms the entire trip to New Zealand. They like were not spotted once by anyone anywhere. And then they jetted off to Japan like straight after. They sort of did what Harry Styles did. He like flew in, didn't see anything, didn't do anything, and then just like jetted off.
And then flew back out again.
Yeah. And now everyone, I'm really quickly going to do a naughty or nice because really we don't have that much time and I only want to hear from Laura on Therapy Speak. So it's a follow-up to last week's when we spoke about Frank Ocean and then basically the day, this always happens, the day our podcast went live, he cancelled his week two of Coachella. Frank Ocean
I saw.
Did. And so basically what? He cited ankle injuries and said his doctor had told him to cancel it. Me asking you the story?
I think so. And I saw something about an ankle thing, but I saw at the end of the article, whatever, he'd actually put out a statement, right? So this had come from him.
And what did he say?
He said, it was chaotic. In a statement provided by an Ocean representative, Ocean said, it was chaotic. There is some beauty in the chaos. It isn't what I intended to show, but I did enjoy being out there and I'll see you soon.
Interesting. But then I will say, it was sort of made up for by the fact that they brought that Labyrinth brought out Zendaya at weekend two.
Oh.
And she has come out and said that the crowd was so loud that she couldn't hear herself and she couldn't hear like what was going on. Because in the recordings, you can't really hear her and she sounds nervous. She sounds like fine, but she sounds nervous, but I think the hype that she was there just, it sent the crowd like I've never seen that before.
Spinning.
I uploaded a video of it as soon as it happened to TikTok. It's now got like 12 million views. Like people are obsessed. Like people, Zendaya and Coachella are like the two most buzz words. Like
yeah.
TikTok algorithm friendly, obviously. And yeah, she sounded so nervous, but she like looked really cool. And good on her for doing that because that's the hugest crowd in the world. Or like
that is amazing. Oh my God. The other thing I've just been seeing everywhere is Boy Genius and Muna.
Oh my God. I know. Same. I'm in love with them. No notes. Really?
No notes. No notes unless Haim, Muna, and Boy Genius got together, then I would probably pass out.
Yeah, okay. Oh, is it naughty or nice? It's a bit naughty, I think, of Frank to. Unless he's hurt his ankle, truly.
And very nice of Zendaya. So you know what? I'm giving it a nice.
Yeah. Okay, you're giving it a nice and I'm giving it a naughty. And that's on Bell.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Balance. Now, speaking of balance, talk to me about Therapy Speak.
Oh, okay, everyone, it's going to be a speedy run through Therapy Speak today, but I do feel, we were going to talk about this last week and then we talked about something else last week? Imposter syndrome last week. Imposter. It's all blurring into one. We talked about imposter syndrome last week, but I don't know, I might have been late to the bandwagon, but I feel like I saw a lot of articles flying around about this. There was a Basel article, there was a New York Times article, and it's something that I feel like has kind of been out there in the ether for a little while now. So it felt like something that me and Luz should talk about, A, because we use therapy speak quite a lot around here, but I also think particularly you, Luz, in the newsletter are very good at kind of when something does kind of start to get used on a mass level, you critique it as well. And you kind of ask, why are we doing this? And so this felt like a really nice thing for us to discuss because, you know, we've talked about things like attachment theory before on here. I talked a little bit about cognitive behavioral therapy last week, and we kind of are starting to use some terms, but equally you're seeing a lot of terms kind of misused as well. So I think it's a really interesting thing. I'm going to read you a little bit from the New York Times article, which I think is a nice intro to everything. It says, first, let's survey the situation. It's as though the haze of our inner lives were being filtered through a screen of therapy worksheets. If we're especially online or roaming the worlds of friendship, wellness, activism, or romance, all things we're doing on this we must consider when we are centering ourselves or setting boundaries, sitting with our discomfort or being present. We just want to name a dynamic. We joke about coping mechanisms, codependent relationships, avoidant attachment styles. We practice self-care. We shun toxic acquaintances. We project. We are triggered. We say wryly, adding that we dislike the word. We catastrophize, ruminate, press on the wound, process. We feel seen. We feel heard. We feel unseen. We feel unheard. We feel heard but not listened to, not actively. We diagnose and receive diagnoses, OCD, ADHD. Our emotional labor is grinding us down. We're doing the work. We need to do the work. A mouthful to get through, first of all.
And I will say that, I know you've been saying the New York Times, but I'm pretty sure that's from the New Yorker article that like kicked this all off. Or did they quote it?
No, it is the New Yorker.
New Yorker, which is fine. Just it's only because I have that on my notes as well, because I was like, that is the quote that I used in the newsletter because it fucking summed it up so well, like the way that we're using it to like joke, saying like, oh, like that makes me triggered, and then being like, I hate that word, but also I don't have another word to explain why I'm like angry or feeling this way. So I thought that was a great
such a good quote. And I think there's lots of things I want to talk about today, but one of the things I wanted to kick this off with, Luz, is something that we've talked about quite a lot. And it's this thing about we diagnose and receive diagnoses. And I feel like you've talked a bit about this before, how people will kind of send you a diagnosis sometimes after you've like written something.
Always. The other day, this is never any hate to this person because it doesn't offend me and it's okay. But the other day I got asked to be on a podcast about successful neurodivergent women, and they had never asked if I was neurodivergent, if I'd been diagnosed with anything. It was just this big spiel about how I was such a like trailblazer and I do it all with, you know, this thing that I have to also manage. And
wow.
I have never been diagnosed. I've never, like, sure, like therapy speak, I have mad tendencies for a lot of things. And I understand, I get a lot of people that write back to the newsletter and say they have ADHD, and the way that I write speaks to them in a way that they haven't seen before. Mm. So that makes sense for people being like, well, maybe.
Which is lovely.
Yeah. Or I have people asking, I sometimes have people just saying, Luz, like I have family members that remind me of you, like are you autistic? Things like that, which is obviously a reach if you didn't have the community that we have. Like I truly find it fine. Like it doesn't hurt me, it doesn't offend me. And to be honest, could be true. A few of these things definitely could be fucking true, but it doesn't it's just a really weird thing that we now have where people don't even really know us, but we put a lot out into the world and then they can feel equipped to diagnose us. Same with TikTok, you know? Like,
well, this is the thing, I think, and this is what this whole like article subject is kind of talking about, is this like how all of these words and rhetoric has kind of entered into our like common vernacular. So we're saying these things all the time. And one of the things that I've talked about before around like personality tests and the Enneagram and things like that, you know, they can be kind of the shortcut to intimacy. So instead of telling someone like how you are feeling or like describing, I don't know, you'd never go on a date and describe your personality, probably, but on a dating profile, you'd put, I'm an INFJ. Like, there's these shortcuts, and people who are kind of common with the rhetoric will understand exactly what that means. And all of a sudden, it's like the shortcut to your person, which I think can be helpful when others subscribe to the same beliefs or values or whatever, or rhetoric. But when they don't, it can, I don't know, raise some issues, which I guess is what this topic is kind of talking about.
Yeah, I feel like it can, if you don't feel on the same page about using terms like this and you both fully understand them, it can feel a bit like star signs. Like if you say I'm an INTP and people feel very strongly about, you know, you're either a star sign person or you're not, and so it can sort of be an off-put. But I feel like for me, not that you've asked, but I'm interested for your take on this as well. Like, we love putting names to things that we can't really otherwise name. And I know there's a lot of talk that we're probably going to get into about therapy speak making us selfish. And I just don't really buy that as like an overarching, as the overarching take for therapy speak. And that's been the take that I've been seeing a lot. But I think
interesting.
If you're talking to the right person that understands you, it can be like I wrote in the newsletter about how I'd spoken to Belle and she had said to me, like, she truly doesn't have any space to take on this one thing. And I was like, well, I do. And instead of her having to lay out her whole, everything that was going on in her life, which, to be clear, we're close enough that she has, she just didn't have to redo that. We sort of could understand each other and I could do the thing and she could not, or vice versa. Whereas for people saying that it's making you selfish, I think people that are already selfish might do that. There are bad people. There are people in the world that are self-centered and selfish. That's fine. They might use it as a weapon, but that's going to happen with basically anything, I think. Selfish people are going to do that. What's your take?
I think that's a really interesting take. And I think I do, for the most part, actually agree with it. There was an amazing essay that I read by Rachel Connolly, and she summed it up quite nicely, which I am going to read because I feel like she's far more eloquent than I am. She says, ultimately, I didn't find the neat declarative therapy speak has made us selfish thesis particularly convincing. I tend to find what I think of as grand unified theory of the universe pieces, which makes these huge claims about what every woman or millennial or other vaguely demographically bonded group is doing and why it can be explained with a fairly niche trend quite dubious. My view is that the stuff never stacks up so neatly or feels true to life when you actually sit and think about the people you know and how they act. Which I think is very similar to what you just said. And I think she gives this really great example of how one of her friends who works in an industry got cancelled, and since then had they been uncancelled. Is that a word? Uncancelled?
Yep, yeah. Horrible one. But
horrible,
it's like
terrible
asking,
one.
Like, yeah, I hate that word, but let me use it.
But she, so they were cancelled, uncancelled, and then they were showing her kind of the messages that they received from friends at the time that they were cancelled. And these friends basically in their messages said they didn't want to associate with this person anymore, but, and none of the people knew each other, but all the messages that they'd sent to this person were unbelievably similar, like to the point where they were like, have they gone and found a template of what to send to your friend when you no longer want to associate with them. And, you know, she says she Googled it and she looked it up and she couldn't find like a pre-existing template. But what it raised for her is like, why would someone want to send this kind of generic message, not a personalized one? And I think what you're talking about with therapy speakers, for someone like you and Belle, where you have a really close friendship, there's a mutual reciprocation there. We've talked about friendships before, you're both getting something out of that situation. You can understand when she says she has no capacity, she's not using something generic. You're just like, I get the lingo, I'm with you. Whereas if someone doesn't have the time to go maybe personalize something with a friendship that's not that close or not that existing, it can feel like these articles are talking about HR speak, very generic, very cold.
Yes. Yeah. If you don't understand the other person, how they think, which takes a quite a already good level of friendship, you shouldn't just be like going out for coffee with someone one time and then being like, sorry, like, I cannot hold space for you. Like, I'm at capacity with friendships. Like, you do owe them, like, or you either, I don't know what you owe them. Go and listen to our breakup podcast on ghosting to know where the line is. But, like, HR speak in the wrong circumstance. Like, HR speak does make me a bit, like, sick to use on friends. So I'm a massive hypocrite, but.
No, you're just complex. You contain multitudes, and that's more therapy speak for you.
Yeah.
But One of the bits that I did want to touch on from the Bustle article, which I think we've actually talked about already, is this idea of boundaries. And so the video that I think went viral on TikTok was outlining how to break up with a friend and kind of telling you how you could do that. And like saying things like, I'm at capacity, or I, you know, can't be there anymore, that sound like these kind of HR lines that you would receive. And there's a few things around this that I want to discuss, but one is that, like, I do think we have to ask ourselves, why did that go viral in the first place? Like, why is that touching on a need that so many people seem to have?
Because everyone is scared of confrontation, I reckon. Whereas I'm not. So when I see shit like that...
As an Enneagram 8, everyone. She thrives.
When I see shit like that, I am like, I understand the need for it, but I can't relate to the need for it. So it's something that I would swipe past immediately. But what do you think?
Well, for me, I am so desperate to retain friendships and love people and be loved.
Yeah.
I can't ever thinking about breaking up with a friend, so I too would swipe past it.
We're from two different, this is why Laura and I work, because we're actually from two totally different sides of everything, but we have the same reaction. Like, we'd both swipe past it, but for very different reasons. I also think there is, if I'm going to be completely honest, like, probably, and this is more therapy speak, it could be like a little bit of narcissism in terms of, I have never really had to break up a friendship because, and I also don't put that much effort sometimes into friendships because I know that I'm just always going to be friends with this person. Maybe it's not narcissism, maybe it's just like content. I'm just, no, I'm always going to be friends with them, but I don't feel the need to like go either way, like really, really communicate with them all the time or to break up with them. I don't know.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think that's been one of the responses to this, is that, like, basically the idea with, like, if you take the idea of something like boundaries, right, in a therapy setting, a lot of the time, and again, they go into this in the Bustle article, so these are more their words than my words, but when they talk about boundaries in therapy, it's not really as extreme as, like, there is now a boundary, I'm ending the friendship, you're cut, you're dead to me. Of course, there are situations where, like, it's unsafe to be with someone, or, you know, there's so many things. But when we talk about boundaries in the general sense, it's normally going to be more around, like, interrelationality and, like, finding out how you can preserve yourself while also possibly showing up for someone, because the idea of a friendship is that you are still there for them when they need you and you're there for them when you need them. And I think what would be far more healthy is reviewing a friendship and thinking, like, okay, has this person genuinely never showed up for me or never been able to hold my space? Oh my gosh, more therapy speak. We need a buzzer. But never been able to show up for my needs or be there for me ever. You know, is it always leaning towards them? Yeah. In which case, possibly we do need to put up a boundary. But I think a step-by-step process of, you know, this is how you end the friendship because you don't have capacity for them right now is not healthy in the long run, because we do need connection and friendship.
And I do think there's, like, not a hard and fast rule when it comes to friendship. I mean, go and listen to our friendship episode to learn about the rules that I've just said there aren't any of. But I do think, like, you get certain things from certain people, and you don't need to have friends that are all there for you in a total crisis. You can have friends that you just love going to the bookstore with, or friends that you just like love talking about reality TV with. And I think as soon as you realize that not everyone has to tick every single fucking box for you, it'll make both your lives easier, because, like, there is a very, like, especially with female friendships, which are so gorgeous and necessary, there is a very romantic side where it's like you have to be best friends, want to spend every waking minute together, but there are just certain friends that you like for certain things, and that's so fine. You don't need to cut them off because they don't tick all your boxes, maybe.
And there's also different seasons for different friendships, I think. Like, I was talking on the phone the other night to, like, one of my best friends, Abby. Shout out, Abby. We were talking about, like, when we first met and, like, kind of just living in each other's pockets, and you were, like, in each other's flats and, like, sharing beds and, you know, doing everything together, and kind of you had this shared life because the people that we were with at the time, everyone was in a very similar life stage, doing very similar things. And now, you know, it's only been probably, what, 6 years since we met, but everyone's doing completely different things. Some people, some people are married, me. Some people, and they suck.
Some people are married. Some people. Whole
spoiler. And they have no time for their friends. We're at capacity. But some people are having babies, like moved overseas, doing like full on creative projects, whatever. Like, and everyone's still friends, and I love them just as much as I did, and we're just as close. But our friendship is no longer me sharing a bed with her. It's like me calling her, you know, when I can or when she can. And that doesn't mean...
Because what is it? Friends for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And it's like, oh, all of those are fine.
Put that on a t-shirt? What are we... It's giving this way to the beach.
Ruby's boyfriend's mum said that to me when Ruby was moving away to Sydney. I was in the car with her and Ruby was in the car with her boyfriend's dad. And I was talking to Susie about how much I'll miss Ruby. And then Ruby's going to... Ruby's going to bomb listening to this. And Susie just turned to me and said, Lucy, there's friends for a reason, a season, or a lifetime, and you and Ruby are a lifetime, or something like that. And I was just like, I know, Susie, but don't do this to me right
Susie,
now.
I actually can't feel this till after the fact.
Ruby messaged me during the friendship episode, or after she'd edited it, being like, that was so sappy, but so good, or something like that. And I was like, shut the fuck up. Like, I forget that you have to listen. You, the person that I cannot hug, has to listen to this. Anyway, so there's friends for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And it's okay to have some for just a season, some for just, you know, the reason you need them. But be careful when you cut them off. If they're just friends for a reason,
maybe don't tell them. And I think as well, like, obviously, yeah, negotiating boundaries can also make a friendship grow and blossom as well. Like saying to someone, you know, I think words like at capacity, you know, from this article, obviously they come up quite a lot. And if it's someone you're not that close with, can be quite harmful. But equally, you should be able to say, like, I'm snowed under at work at the moment. Can we have a breather here? Or
I have too many friends right now. I need to cut you out. No, do not say that. Still think about other people's feelings.
Please. There's two more things that I want to go through. And one of them is the kind of error in using these terms incorrectly. And I think... Again, this is another great quote from the article, but they say, you know, I want to be clear, there's no reason why people who are not professional psychologists should be expected to use these terms correctly, which is true. But equally, that means there's a lot of inaccuracy. And I think, for instance, those people messaging you telling that you have, you're neurodivergent or whatever, or I think one that comes up a lot that I've seen come up a lot at least is like people saying, I'm so OCD, which I've seen a lot. And we actually did a great article, which I will link in the show notes, when I was at Vice on this, around like what it actually is like to live with OCD and kind of the harm that can be caused when people use terms like that kind of colloquially.
Similarly, Ribs and I did a whole episode on gaslighting when we were maybe a few years ago about how we made a pact to stop using it incorrectly as a joke because it was like not good for the world. Have not been able to stick to that pact because it's a word that just gets thrown around so... commonly, but
yeah, well, I think this is the thing. It's you can say that you're going to try do it and try because being on the receiving end of that kind of language, if you are suffering from something like that, can be quite destabilizing. But equally, I mean, there's so many words that are thrown around constantly, like toxic, narcissist, like all these things. And it's like the definition of a narcissist is actually pretty hectic and like quite intense.
Me using it earlier in the podcast, me saying maybe this is narcissistic. No, but that as a verb,
exactly,
is still. Okay, us English teachers right here.
That is a verb. It's a doing word.
Yeah, that is a doing verb. Yeah, it was hard for me to even, I had to go in, noun, naming word, doing, anyway.
No, okay, wait, there's, okay, one more thing I think I do really want to touch on because it is very important and this is on class performance. So this kind of use of therapy speak can also become a class performance. In the United States, basic mental health care remains a luxury item. This is from the article. There's a reason why the most fluent speakers of the trend tend to be wealthy and white. This also may explain some of the irritation that therapy speak occasionally provokes. The words suggest a sort of woke posturing, a theatrical deference to norms of kindness. They also show how the language of suffering often finds its way into the mouths of those who suffer least. And I feel like that is a very, very important part to bring to this pod as well that I just wanted to end on because I think that is incredibly true.
Oh, I think I have no notes on that and it's probably why we feel or everyone feels so fucking cringe about the overuse of therapy speak because it is just used by these not by these people, but by people that can afford it, who, like you said, are usually wealthy and white and are usually people that take things and ruin them or appropriate them or, you know, use them until they have no meaningful meanings anymore. And so I think
or relevance or meaning.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I think, one I would like to end this on kind of, there's obviously, you know, there's a lot of this floating around at the moment. I think what you talked about, Luce, as well, that it doesn't necessarily mean you're selfish is a very good point, because I think that a lot of this shows that they're, people in general have a need to find connection with each other, and they're looking for ways in which they can describe things and communicate with people, and that is hopefully a good thing. Mm-hmm. So I think it will be interesting to see what this is, the landscape of this is like in maybe 6 months' time, which I think we say every single time, but no, I am intrigued.
So am I, because I really don't feel like it's not that easy to take words out of like our vocab, so they might be here to stay.
True.
Maybe used in a better way or less. Laura, what is on your radar this week?
All right, I've got two things on my radar. One of them, Luce, which I was going to ask you about off mic. I finished Jury Duty.
Yes.
And I noticed that you've been messaging someone.
Yes, I'm trying to get, okay, and I was going to talk to you about this off mic as well. I'm trying to get an interview with Ron, and I do think it's going to be hard enough to time it with me and him that if you want to zoom in at an incredibly fucked up hour, I don't know when it's going to be yet. You're more than welcome to. But again, I don't know if it will even come to fruition. And he's a busy man, honestly, and his followers are like going up like as I'm fucking.
I will wake up at 3 a.m. for that man, the sweetest man.
He's the world's sweetest man. No, he is actually the sweetest man. So everyone, it could be a Lucy interviewing Ron. It could be Lucy and Laura, but it seems like it's going to be hard to admin. So
it might just be Ron.
We will try. It could just be Ron talking to, or it could just be Laura and Ron. Maybe that works better.
Oh, finally.
Finally, Lucy's gone from all of this. Jury Duty. I fucking loved it, and I just think he's the sweetest, most kind. When he played Bug's Life for the guy.
That clip for me. No, we can't go into it. So that is on my radar. Also, talked about this a little bit last week. I went and saw a food writer, chef, live Alison Roman, who I love, and her book, Sweet Enough, the dessert book, is out now. And I famously have said I hate baking, but she might turn me around. So stay tuned for Shit You Should Cook About.
I love Shit You Should Bake About. No, that doesn't have the same ring to it, does it?
Nope. Luce, what's on your radar?
I haven't written anything down for on my radar, but then as we were talking about therapy speak, I realized that like the past three shows that movies or shows that I've watched, except for Jury Duty, have been really fucking depressing. So I'm sort of like, what is in the air at the moment? So Beef, I don't know if you've heard of Beef on Netflix right now.
I've seen it, but I haven't watched it.
It's just, I don't know, very depressing, very, like, stressful. Everyone loves it. It's, like, great acting and stuff. But I think there's some controversy around one of the actors joking about sexual assault. It's just kind of stressful and depresso. So, I don't know. It's not for me, but it's for a lot of people. Also, I watched The Whale, which we've talked about. I fucking cried the whole time. It's, like, so sad. So, sometimes I do that because I need to force crying because I can't do it on my own. So if you're in that position, Laura, don't say a word on that. And then also A Good Person, the new Florence Pugh movie, also with Morgan Freeman. Megan, it's really depressing, so seriously don't watch that either.
Lucy, watch Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso and Succession are sprinkled in there, but they're like one tiny glimpse in between whole series and whole movies of depressing things. But, like, it's a really good movie, A Good Person, but just don't watch it if you're fragile or you don't want to feel sad.
Well, on that note, everyone.
On that note, you should listen to Culture Vulture if you don't want to feel sad. All of our old episodes, specifically the friendship one. Our breakup episodes are really good, but they're probably Another one might you feel sad, that might you feel good.
The Enneagram was pure chaos, so I would definitely go there for a laugh. Definitely go there.
Oh, my God. The Enneagram was like, we can't even count from 1 to 8.
No,
we
that just was went 1 to 9, actually. Would you know? One but Luz nine. Just ended it on her number because...
she's a narcissist.
Because she's a narcissist.
No, because God. Nines are really well balanced, so they do not exist in my world.
Okay, well, on that note, everyone, also this week, Shit You Should Cook About is, I was going to plug it at the start, Luz, but I forgot, my probably most iconic recipe apart from the focaccia. So stay tuned, everyone.
Oh my God, okay, I really can't wait. I really cannot wait. And seriously, the amount of people that we get sending in that they've cooked these things is still incredible.
It's my favorite thing in the whole world. And I'm having a dinner party this weekend where I'm going to cook a lot. So, again, stay tuned. Maybe I'll make a reel. Maybe I'll send Luz some pics.
Is this where you get into your real era? It's been your fake era for too long.
It has been my fake era. Maybe we'll start. Maybe we won't. Stay tuned, everyone. And on that note.
We're going to set some boundaries and end the podcast here.
Because we're both at absolute capacity.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.